Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me? Yeah, thank you. We have a British Sign Language interpreter here today, to the side. Does anybody need that interpretation this morning? No? I think probably we can give you a rest for this morning. Thank you very much. There is a hearing loop set up as well today, if anybody needs that. Thank you. Right. My name is Stuart Cowperthwaite. I'm the lead member of the panel of examining inspectors appointed by the Secretary of State for Transport for the application made by Highways England for an order granting development consent for the A38 Derby Junctions project. By way of introduction, my professional background is as a chartered civil and structural engineer, leading multidisciplinary consultancy teams on major construction projects. I previously led an urban regeneration company, and this is my third nationally significant infrastructure project as an examining inspector.
Good morning. My name is Simon Warder. I'm the other member of the panel. My background is as a chartered town planner. As an inspector, I've undertaken a number of planning appeals and hearings, and I've also undertaken transport and compulsory purchase order inquiries. Prior to that, I was director of a national planning and environmental consultancy.
Thank you. As the examining authority, we'll be holding an examination into this application and will then write a report to the Secretary of State with a recommendation on whether or not consent should be given. A casework team works alongside us throughout the process. With us today are Robert Ranger, who is the case manager. Is Robert? Yep. To my side. And then Bart Bakoviak at the back. Thank you, Bart, who is the case officer. Please approach Robert or Bart rather than Simon or I if you have any queries during the breaks in proceedings. I'll now run through some housekeeping matters. If you have a mobile phone, can you please make sure it's turned off or on silent mode at least? Thank you. If there's a fire alarm, then please leave by the fire exits. There's one to the back here. To my back, to your front. There's one to the back, another one, and another one. We've been told that there's no planned practice this morning, and so any alarm should be taken as being for real. If there is an alarm, then we're to assemble at the car park behind me. A note has been taken of the meeting, and an audio recording is being made. Are there any members of the media present at all today? No? Please, could anybody using social media during or after the end of the proceedings do so responsibly? And with proper care and respect for other people, please don't disturb other people. This must not be misused or disruptive. No individually recorded items may be relied on as evidence or used in submissions. The purpose of this meeting this morning is to consider procedural issues only relating to the way in which the application is to be examined and the timetable for that examination. This morning's focus is on the examination process. So, this morning, we shall not be discussing any matters relating to the merits or otherwise of the proposal. There will be opportunities over the following months of the examination for you to give us your views on the application, either through written submissions or at hearings. To be clear, we do not propose to make or announce any procedural decisions this morning. I would now like to ask certain parties to introduce themselves. Firstly, who is representing and will speak for the applicant, please?
Sir, my name is Liz Dunn. I'm a partner at Burgess Salmon, and I am representing the applicant today, Highways England. If I just introduce the rest of the people on the table. On my left is Josh Burton from ACOM. He will be managing the document projection as we go through the hearing this morning. To my right is Stephen Humphreys, who is also a solicitor from Burgess Salmon. Next to him Joe Mulqueen from Highways England, who is the Assistant Project Manager for the A38 Derby Junction scheme. And at the end of the table on this side is Andy Wilson, who is the Project Manager for the A38 from ACOM.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone who may wish to speak for Derby City Council?
Sir, Paul Clark, Chief Planning Officer from Derby City.
Thank you. Derbyshire County Council?
Yes, sir, I'm Steve Buffery. I'm a team leader in planning policy and monitoring at Derbyshire County Council.
I'm Jeff Blissett. I'm a transport planner for Derbyshire County Council and represent Derbyshire County Council as the local highway authority for Derbyshire.
Thank you. Washborough Council?
I'm Steve Birkinshaw. I'm the head of planning of our Washborough Council, and I have a delegated authority of the local planning authority in respect to these matters.
Thank you.
Also got Stephen Mott, that's MOTT, Senior Planning Officer at Washborough Council.
Thank you. Any other local authorities present today? No, thank you. Any parish or town councils?
I represent the rest of the parish council.
And you, sir, are?
Stephen Reed.
Oh, sorry, could you use the microphone?
Yeah, Stephen Reed, spelled R-E-A-D.
And could you, your organisation again, please?
Bredstall Parish Council.
Thank you very much. So we need to use the microphone so that the recording equipment picks it up. Thank you. Any other... the Environment Agency?
My name's Joe Drury. I'm a planning specialist for the Sustainable Places team in the Environment Agency.
Thank you. Any other statutory consultees?
I'm John Shelton. I'm from Western Power Distribution.
Thank you. Is there anybody here representing another organisation or group?
Mohammed Habib, Head of Asset Development for Metropolitan Housing Trust.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Metropolitan Housing.
And your name again, sorry?
Mohammed Habib.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm not familiar with your organisation. How does your organisation relate to the scheme, please?
One of our properties is affected by the works at the Ashburn Road roundabout.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else here today who may wish to speak or make themselves known to the meeting? Okay, thank you. The main opportunities to speak will be when we pause at appropriate moments for questions. The fact that you may not have given your name at this stage doesn't mean that you can't speak during the meeting or ask questions. Please indicate if you wish to speak at any point during the meeting, and we'll call you at the appropriate time. If we do invite you to speak, please use a microphone and start by introducing yourself, your interest in the application, and on whose behalf you are speaking. Please ensure, as I said before, that you use the microphones when speaking so that you can be heard and so that your contribution is picked up by the recording equipment. Each time you start to speak, please give your name so that we're clear for the recording who has spoken in each case. Simon and I won't do that, but if each of you could, that would be helpful, please. Please direct all comments, questions and answers through Simon or I, rather than directly to any other party. So your contributions must be given through this table, rather than directly to anybody else in the meeting. In our letter of the 23rd of August 2019, inviting you to this meeting, we strongly encouraged any groups of individuals who have similar views on the examination procedure to choose one representative to speak for the group. This will help us to run a fair, efficient and effective meeting and help us to make sure that all relevant views can be heard. We will cover the points in the agenda in Annex A of the letter inviting you to this meeting. The agenda is also projected onto the screen behind us. There may be a break if required, and the meeting is scheduled to close by 12 p.m, although it should be possible to close earlier depending on the number of representations and contributions made. Are there any questions about the agenda or the arrangements for this meeting? Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll now move on to item 2 on the agenda, which is the examination process. Some of you may be familiar with the procedures set out in the Planning Act 2008, but for those of you who are not, I will outline some of the essential features of this examination process. We will deal with the detailed arrangements for the examination and the deadlines for each stage of the process when we look at the timetable. The purpose of the examination is to enable us to make a recommendation to the Secretary of State as to whether this project should receive consent in the form of a development consent order. The Planning Act has brought a distinct regime to the consideration of nationally significant infrastructure projects. So the examination is not a public inquiry, nor is it a planning appeal. First, it is an inquisitorial process in which we as the examining authority take the lead in establishing what is important and relevant to the decision that the Secretary of State needs to take. We will therefore be looking for evidence of what is important and relevant and testing the evidence put forward to see how robust it is. Secondly, the primary method of examining the application is through written representations. Whilst there is a provision for holding certain types of hearings, the central part of the examination is the written process, which is used to gather information about the application. Where we consider that it will assist the examination process to hold an oral hearing into an issue, we will do so. For example, we have already decided that a hearing about the applicant's draft development consent order, or draft DCO as we will call it, will take place this afternoon. The Planning Act sets a statutory timescale for the examination and for the determination of the application. This includes 6 months in which the examination must be completed, a further 3 months in which we must complete our report with our findings, conclusions, and recommendations to the Secretary of State, and a further 3 months for the Secretary of State to reach a decision on the application. The decision is therefore scheduled to be published within 12 months from the start of the examination. I'll now say a bit more about the written submissions for the examination before Stuart considers the hearings and site inspections. Firstly, the written submissions. Everyone has the opportunity to set out their case and the evidence to support it in writing, and everyone will have the opportunity to comment on everyone else's written submissions. Many people have already provided us with written material in their relevant representations. Any document that any party wishes us to consider must be formally lodged as part of the examination process and available to all parties for the examination. Documents can be introduced into the examination in a number of different ways. These include the written representations and relevant representations, written answers to our questions as examining authority, written submissions in response to material submitted by other parties, a written submission of an oral case put at a hearing, or otherwise requested by us as the examining authority. Written material will be published on our website so that it is available for consideration by all parties. I would now like to turn to the different types of document in turn, starting with relevant and written representations, then local impact reports and the examining authorities' questions before moving on to statements of common ground. So, relevant and written representations. First of all, thank you for all who have submitted relevant representations to the examination. All of these were published on our website on the 13th of August. Please be assured that we will consider all relevant representations, not just those concerning the matters which we have identified as principal issues from the initial assessment or those on which we ask questions. Written representations provide a further opportunity for interested parties to make a submission to the examination. As we will see when we come to look at the draft timetable, Tuesday the 5th of November has been set for the receipt of written representations. There's no obligation or requirement to submit a written representation if a party has nothing to add to what it has said in their relevant representation. There will be opportunities for comments to be made on relevant and written representations and for responses to be made to those comments. Deadlines for comments and responses are set out in the draft timetable. All representations, comments and responses will be published on a website as they are received so that everyone can see them. Any questions about relevant or written representations? No? Okay. Moving on to local impact reports, or LIR. This is a report produced by a local authority in writing, giving details of the likely impact of the proposal on its area or any part of that area. Local authorities were advised at the start to start preparing their LIRs as soon as possible after the examination was accepted. Now, the Planning Act requires a number of councils to be invited to submit LIRs, and all of those councils have been notified. But perhaps for the councils who are here today, could they please confirm whether they will be providing an LIR, and if they are, an update on the progress? So perhaps if we start with Derby City Council.
Thank you, sir. As Highway Authority, we are producing an LIR and working hard to meet the deadline of the 5th of November. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Steve Buffery from Derbyshire County Council. Yes, sir. We've commenced work on preparing a local impact report too, and it's in draft form at the moment, subject to consultation with various topic area colleagues.
So do you anticipate that that consultation process will allow you to submit by the 5th of November?
Oh, yes, certainly, sir. Yes, definitely.
Yes, sir, we've commenced a local impact report. It will be ready by the 5th of November. It will be brief.
Next, we turn to the examining authority's written questions. The initial assessment of principal issues, our further examination of the application documents and relevant representations, together with matters arising today, and our unaccompanied site inspections so far, will form the basis of our first written questions. We need to ensure that the examination is even-handed and rigorous. There will be a significant number of first-round questions. They will be directed at the applicant, local authorities, other public bodies, and other interested parties. They will be wide-ranging. Some will address quite fundamental issues and others quite detailed points. You may think that some of the answers are already contained in the documents that have been introduced into the examination so far. But even so, please would you answer the questions directed to you and provide any cross-references. We will need to ensure that all the issues that might be relevant are identified and shared, and that they can be tested properly. The examination timetable will set a deadline for receipt of responses to our questions and then for any interested party to offer comments on those responses. Again, all comments and responses will be published on our website as they are received for everyone to see. This may then be followed by a second round of questions and answers and subsequent comments on those answers. This second round would probe further into any unanswered points or address any new points that have emerged during the examination. In addition to those iterations of questions, answers and comments, we may at any time during the examination seek further information or written comments. And provision for this is made under Rule 17 of something called the Infrastructure Planning Examination Procedure Rules. Any questions on the examining authority's questions? Moving on to the statements of common ground. Annex E of the letter inviting you to this meeting requested the preparation of statements of common grounds, SOCGs, between the applicant and various parties. The aim of these is to agree factual information and to identify where there is agreement and particularly where there are points which remain in dispute. the uncommon ground. We need to know and understand your positions and whether they are shared or otherwise. The identification of positions that aren't shared is important to us. The list of SOCGs we have produced is not exclusive, and we would encourage you to find opportunities for identifying other areas of common ground, if that's at all possible. Where there is a statement of common ground, it does not mean that we will not be examining those matters further. So looking at the applicant, are you happy to take the lead in the preparation of the statements of common ground?
So we are, it's Liz Dunn. Yes, so we are happy to take the lead, and we have started with a number of those already. I do have a question about the sort of format of the statements of common ground. I don't know if you want to deal with that now or in item five when we come onto the deadline for that.
No, I think we'll deal with it now.
We'll deal with it now.
Yeah.
So within Annex A, so you've set out a very detailed list of the topics you'd like covered within those statements of common ground that you've broadly separated into sort of four key areas. You've also identified that those statements of common ground would be with multiple parties, so effectively the local authorities and then other bodies, including the Environment Agency. From experience, negotiating and agreeing statements of common ground with multiple parties is very difficult and very time-consuming, and I would suggest, if it fits with what you're looking for, if we are to reach agreement, what the applicant would prefer to do is to negotiate separate statements of common ground with each of those parties on the issues. We think it will be much more time efficient and actually allow us to reach agreement and then get those into the examination more quickly than if we're having to get all those multiple parties to agree as well effectively to the statements of common ground effectively.
The key is to reach as much agreement as possible between all of the parties. So if it is possible to reach common ground with all of the different parties under each of those headings, that would be helpful. However, we do appreciate the logistics of doing that. And it's not unusual for the applicant to prepare separate statements of common ground with separate organisations. So if that's the route that needs to be taken, then that's fine.
Thank you, sir. That's very helpful.
So the first objective should be to agree with all of the parties. But if that's going to put at risk submitting the statement within the deadline, then agree with who you can and we'll come back to the others.
Yeah, yep. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but if the statements of common ground...
Could you say who you are and...
Sorry, I'm a resident.
And your name?
Shamim Khan. How are all of the parties going to know what their respective positions are if they're going to be individually liaising with, in relation to the statements of common ground? I don't understand.
All of the statements of common ground will be published, so everyone will be able to see all of the statements of common ground, and then there'll be opportunities to raise issues related to those and respond to those issues as well during the examination. Is that okay?
So for the other relevant parties who we've asked to participate in the Statements of Common Ground, can we just have a brief comment on your position?
Thank you, sir. Paul Clark, Derby City. Yes, we've had our first draft, and the first draft is back with the applicants, and subsequent meetings have been arranged for the immediate coming weeks to try and resolve some of the issues that have been raised.
Yes, sir, Steve Buffery, Derbyshire County Council, sir. Yes, we received a draft of the Statement of Common Ground from the applicant last week, and we're currently coordinating comments with colleagues on that Statement of Common Ground. So we're hoping to have comments back to the applicant by the end of this week.
Steve Birkinshaw, yes, we've received a copy of the Statement of Common Ground and we will be responding to it in due course.
Do you anticipate responding so that the final version can be pulled together by the 5th of November?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, Joe Drury, Environment Agency. Yes, we've already responded back to the first draft of the Statement of Common Ground with Highways England. and they've come back with more comments, which we're currently reviewing at the moment.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Are there any other parties who feel they may usefully participate in the process of producing statements of common ground?
We've been invited to Bredsall Parish Council to enter into one, and we've agreed to. As far as I'm aware, there's nothing actually being done at this stage.
Could the applicant comment on that, please?
So it's Liz Dunn from Burgess Salmon. The draft is being prepared and in respect of Erewash Borough Council and will be issued shortly.
We're talking here about
Bredsall Parish Council. Apologies, Bredsall Parish Council.
Thank you.
Okay, Stuart will now talk about the hearings.
Thank you. So turning to the hearings. As Simon said, the primary method of examining the application is in writing. However, there will be some provisions for hearings during the examination. The hearings will build on the foundations of the various documents and comments that we've just considered. We ask that interested parties should seek to engage fully through the written process, rather than think that they can wait for a hearing as their opportunity to influence the proceedings. It may be that a hearing on an issue is not held, or it might not address the questions you ask or that you want to answer. You'll find it useful to follow the production of evidence as it appears on the project website so that you can see how the examination is progressing. If you're unsure how to access the project website, then please ask Bart or Rob in the breaks between, after this preliminary meeting. There are three different types of hearings under the Planning Act 2008. The first type of hearing is an open floor hearing, which must be held if requested by an interested party. The second type of hearing is a compulsory acquisition hearing, which must be held if requested by an affected person. You should know if you're an affected person. If you're not sure whether you're an affected person or not, then again, please ask Rob or Bart and they will help to clarify. As we will see when we come to look at the draft timetable, a deadline of Tuesday the 5th of November has been set for relevant parties to inform us that they wish to speak at an open floor hearing or at a compulsory acquisition hearing. The third type of hearings are issue-specific hearings, which are held if we, as the examining authority, decide that they are necessary to ensure adequate examination of an issue or to ensure that an interested party has a fair chance to put their case. The Development Consent Order, or DCO, as we'll commonly refer to it, is a critical document. If consent is given, the DCO will govern how the development takes place and will be controlled. All matters relating to the draft DCO are integral to this examination. In Annex C of the letter inviting you to this meeting, we took a procedural decision to hold an issue-specific hearing in respect of the draft DCO at 1:30 p.m. today, or if later, 1 hour after the close of this meeting. This hearing will provide an opportunity for the draft DCO to be discussed early in the process. Provisional dates for further issue-specific hearings, one or more of which are likely to be on the draft DCO, are identified in the draft timetable. The draft timetable identifies the provisional dates that have been reserved for open floor hearings, compulsory acquisition hearings, and further issue-specific hearings. The draft timetable also sets out the dates on which notification will be provided of whether these hearings will go ahead, and the dates when we will issue any agendas. I'd now like to make some general points on how the hearings will be run. We encourage anyone who wishes to be heard at a hearing and who has a common view or common point to make with others to group together and appoint one spokesperson to make best use of the time rather than have the same point repeated. Repetition of a point does not mean that it will carry more weight in the examination, and we will intervene if submissions become repetitious. Anyone who speaks at a hearing should expect us to ask them questions. At the hearing, anyone who is an interested party can give oral evidence based on their relevant or written representation. Should there be a lot of requests to speak, then we will announce a time limit on speaking. We do not expect someone to read out their previous written representation, but expect speakers to elaborate on evidence already submitted. So there's no need to repeat points. We will address all points that are made to us. There's no need to repeat the things that are already covered in written representations, because we'll give them the attention that they deserve. The applicant will be provided with an opportunity to respond orally or clarify factual matters through us after an interested party has spoken. No direct dialogue will generally be permitted between any parties in hearings, apart from in certain special circumstances when we feel that it will be beneficial to allow cross-examination, but that is rare. Are there any questions about the hearings? Thank you. So moving on to the site inspections. We carried out a number of unaccompanied site inspections over 2 days in August 2019 and again yesterday. These were based on viewpoints featured in the environmental statement and were carried out on public land in the vicinity of the development. A record of these inspections will shortly be published to the project website. We intend to undertake inspections of all viewpoints listed in the environmental statement. We believe that these can be carried out unaccompanied. We intend to make time for further unaccompanied site inspections over the next few months. A list of further sites and viewpoints visited will be posted on the website and updated. We currently see no need for further accompanied visits to these locations. However, we would welcome any suggestions for further unaccompanied site inspections on public land. We do wish to make sure that we have been to all the places that interested parties are most concerned for us to visit. You are also able to suggest accompanied site inspections if this will help us to better understand representations or where we need to be accompanied because there is no public access. Please note that an accompanied site visit is not an opportunity to express any views on the merits of the case. It's an opportunity for us to view the application site and its surroundings. If such a visit is held, then we would need to be accompanied by a representative of the local authorities, any relevant statutory consultees, and the applicant. Although there may be an opportunity for a small number of interested parties to attend an accompanied site inspection, it is likely that attendance would need to be limited for logistical and safety reasons. Deadlines for representations relating to site inspections are included in the draft timetable. Are there any questions about the site inspections? No, thank you.
Okay, we'll move on now to item 3 on the agenda, which is the initial assessment of principal issues. Our initial assessment of the broad areas covering the principal issues was circulated as Annex B of the letter inviting you to this meeting. That list was drawn from our examination of the application documents and the relevant representations. However, it's not intended to be exclusive. Any other issues that arise will also be considered and will become part of the examination if we conclude that they are important and relevant to the application. Are there any questions on the process of identifying the principal issues? No. Moving on then to items 4, 5 and 6, which concern the examination timetable. The draft timetable is set out in Annex C of the letter inviting you to the meeting, and we think it will be best to go through the timetable item by item, and it will be useful to have this to hand as we do so, although it is also on the screen for everyone to be able to see. The timetable has to cover a range of possibilities. Not all of the events timetabled may turn out to be necessary. and we will take any decisions on the events to be held as the examination progresses. It may therefore be possible to close the examination earlier than the timetabled date of the 8th of April 2020, which is under item 19 on the timetable. However, we can't say this for certain at this time. All parties should be aware that after the last timetabled deadline or event, which is currently the 17th of March 2020, we may decide that the examination is complete and you'll be told that the examination is closed. Once it is closed, we cannot take any further submissions into account. Any submissions made to the Planning Inspectorate after the examination is closed will be forwarded to the Secretary of State to deal with, and we will not see them when we are writing our report. So therefore, if you want to send in anything for us to consider, we strongly encourage you to do so as soon as possible. Just on a detailed point, the timetable includes a 12 noon deadline. The main advantage of this is that the case team is working at that time and can be contacted at that time. There's also less delay in uploading submissions to the website when they are received at noon rather than later in the day. Does any party have any strong views as to why the 12 deadline should not be adopted?
So I think from experience, recognising that the 12 noon deadline is a good deadline because there are people in the office at PINS. Deadlines of midnight have been used on other examinations that I'm aware of and have participated in, which does again give a little bit of extra time to get things finalised. It may be helpful to set those deadlines just in terms of giving those that little bit of extra time on the days when submissions are to be made.
Can we ask whether any of the views, as Simon has set out, the benefit of 12 noon is that help is at hand and advice is at hand around that time. That's one of the key reasons for suggesting that time. Obviously, the applicant is an experienced applicant and perhaps doesn't need the help at 11:30 p.m. Are there any other thoughts on whether we should have a 12 noon deadline or a midnight deadline? Or if you don't have a strong view, obviously you don't need to give it. Any particular views? Okay, we'll consider that point. Thank you.
The timetable which we've currently set out is not set in stone and may be amended during the examination. If that's the case, we will write to all interested parties and let them know. Are there any observations or other questions on the timetable generally? So now we'll turn to the timetable and look at each item in turn. We're happy to consider any comments on the way through the timetable. Just indicate if you have any comments to make and wait for the microphone to arrive. So just to be clear, we're now looking at the timetable at Annex C of the letter. I wonder whether that can perhaps be brought up on the screen.
It is.
Item 1 on this timetable refers to this morning's meeting. Item 2 is the issue-specific hearing that we mentioned earlier into the draft DCO, which was the subject of a procedural decision in the letter inviting you to the meeting. Item 3, the updated timetable will be published in what's called a Rule 8 letter, which will have a link to the first written questions and which will be published on our website. Item 4, this is the first deadline for submissions on the 5th of November. It includes deadlines for the submission of written representations, the local impact reports, statements of common ground, responses to the examining authority's first written questions, notification of wishes to be heard at hearings, representations regarding site inspections, and comments and responses on previous submissions. So this is an important deadline that includes some of the key written submissions for the examination. These submissions are required in order to assist in making a decision as to whether it will be necessary to hold any further issue-specific hearings. This deadline also provides for the applicant to submit updates on the draft DCO, the explanatory memorandum which accompanies the DCO, the book of reference and statement of reasons. Other deadlines are identified for further updates to these key documents to ensure that the most up-to-date versions can always be made available to the examination. Please note that any submissions received after any deadline in the timetable may not be accepted, so that it is essential that you adhere to the timetable, but we'll come back to you on the 12 o'clock or the midnight point. Item 5 is when we will give notification of any hearings or accompanied site visits to be held on the provisional dates which are set out under item 8. This will include some information on the overall scope of each hearing and the arrangements for any accompanied site inspection to help people reserve time in their diaries.
Sorry, could we just scroll down through the agenda as Simon works through it so that people can see? Thank you.
The need to hold an open floor hearing, compulsory acquisition hearing, or accompanied site inspection will partly depend on whether we receive any notification under item 4. Affected persons should please write to us to request a compulsory acquisition hearing. Any person who is unsure whether they are an affected person, as Stuart said this just now, should speak to Robert Ranger or Bart Bukowiak at the close of this meeting. Item 6.
Sir, apologies. Before we move on to item 6, we do have a comment on item 5.
Okay.
Item 5 is in relation to the notification by the examining authority. Sorry, on the timetable, just where we were. Item 5 is in relation to the date that the examining authority issues its notification of the time and place for hearings, if required. And that gives 28 days between the notification of that date and then the hearing takes place, the hearings which could be taking place in December. As you know, the regulations require the applicant, Highways England, to issue a notification in the newspaper 21 calendar days before each of those hearings to advertise those hearings. Highways England is, as you know, a government company that procures a number of things through framework agreements, many of which cover all of its projects. The organisation that is Highways England's appointed statutory advertiser, called Penna Adline, and because of the systems they use, they need to receive the draft notification to go into all the newspapers where the advertisements are going to go 14 calendar days before the date of publication. It is a slow system, but it's the system that Highways England use, which means that the 28 calendar days notice of hearings isn't sufficient to allow for the publication of those notifications of hearings and to give people the full 28 days notice of those hearings. So we would ask that the Planning Inspectorate allows a minimum of 42 calendar days, so that's an extra 14 days or 2 weeks, between the notification of the date and time and place of the hearing, which will allow Highways England then to prepare the notices and give Penna those 14 days that they need to be able to publish the notifications.
Yes. Do you need, let's come back to the 14-day question second. Would 42 days be needed, or would 21 plus 14 days be needed?
Highways England needs the 7 days to prepare the notice and then the 14 days to publish the notifications.
14 days does seem like an awfully long time.
Yes. all I can say is that what's happened, because this system has to be used, what's happened on other hearings is that the full 28-day notification hasn't been given, which I think is not an ideal situation.
The timetable is very compressed. the date that we've identified for item five is only 1 week after we receive a lot of information. I think the danger is that we would... I think we can consider that point. I think I would be loath to move the hearing dates because actually that compresses the end of the examination, probably uncomfortably. We do have the facility to cancel hearings if necessary. I'm thinking on my feet here, but there may be a way for us to give a notification that works with your timescales, but there may be later change to them.
Thank you, sir. I think we would accept that, that if it meant that we were, you were taking a cautious approach in respect of hearings that maybe had to be cancelled at a later date, that that is better than not giving the full notification.
Okay.
Effectively.
We should be able to make something work, I think, around that then.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So, you're happy on item five?
Yes, thank you.
We'll move on to item six. This should be, I think, self-explanatory. The final bullet point in item six only applies, and similarly for other deadlines, if we have made an earlier Rule 17 statement requesting further information. Item seven is when we will issue the agendas for any hearings held under item eight, and this will be sufficiently detailed to allow parties to prepare and finalise who should attend. If the hearings are not required, they will be cancelled at least 1 week before their timetable date, and based on what we've just heard, that may turn out to be the case. Item 8, the need for these hearings and accompanied site inspections will depend on the progress of the examination and on the receipt of notifications under item 4. Item 9 is a further deadline for submissions and should be self-explanatory. Item 10, as I mentioned earlier, the second written questions would probe further into any unanswered points or address any new points that have emerged during the examination. This is also when we will give notification of any further hearings to be held under the provisional dates reserved under item 14. And I guess we'll need to go through the same process there that we'd just spoken about. This will include some further information on the overall scope of each hearing to help people reserve time in their diaries. Items 11 and 12 are more deadlines for submissions, and again, hopefully that's fairly straightforward. Item 13 is when we will issue agendas for any hearings held under item 14. And again, these should be sufficiently detailed to allow parties to prepare and to finalise who should attend. Again, if the hearings are not required, they will be cancelled at least 1 week before their timetable date. Item 14, as I've said before, the need for these hearings will depend on the progress of the examination. Items 15 to 18, I think, are self-explanatory. Item 16 is the date when we will issue our schedule of changes to the draft DCO following the submission by the applicant of their final version of the draft DCO under item 15. Item 19, just a reminder that please be aware that we may decide that the examination is complete at any time after the last timetabled event, which is currently on the 17th of March 2020, at which time you will be notified that the examination is closed and no more information will be accepted. So now turning back to the agenda for this meeting, Stuart is going to say something about procedural items.
Thank you. Were there any other queries or questions actually about the timetable that Simon's just taken us through? Okay, thank you. So item seven, we haven't had any matters submitted in advance that raise a procedural matter for us under agenda item 7, which takes us to agenda item 8. Is there anything else anyone wishes to raise within the scope of this morning's meeting, and specifically in relation to the timetable or the examination process?
I have two points of clarification I'd like advice on, please. I'm Jeff Blissett. I'm a represent Derbyshire County Council as local highway authority. So having read the statements and the evidence produced by House England, I can't find any reference to detrunking considerations. Is that a matter that you feel is before you or is likely to be raised or not?
I'd like the applicant to comment on that, actually.
It's Liz Dunn on behalf of the applicant. Highways England's view is we're not detrunking any roads and therefore there are no detrunking provisions within the development consent order.
Okay, we're slightly outside the scope of this meeting. I think if that's an issue that could be taken forward in your statement of common ground, if possible.
Yes, by all means.
And see if you can reach a common position on that.
Yeah.
If there are outstanding issues, then please raise them in your local impact report as well.
Yes, sir. I'll certainly follow that. My last point is a very minor point. I would appreciate clarification upon. Normally, when the Highways England construct highway, and they need to construct highway or make alterations to the county highway network, they enter into what I believe is a Section 4 agreement under the 1980s Highways Act that enables the Secretary of State to carry out construction works on the local highway. Does the development consent order allow that to happen, or will that be a separate consideration?
Let's pass that again to the applicant.
So, Liz Dunn on behalf of the applicant. The form of the development consent order is effectively the power for Highways England to do that. Therefore, as I understand it, that takes away the requirement for that agreement to be in place because it effectively puts those powers. I suggest that it's one of those things that we take offline and discuss separately.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other matters in relation to this morning's meeting, please? Okay, thank you. I believe that we've now covered all of the items on the agenda. As soon as possible after this meeting, and I hope before the end of the week, but no promise, but as soon as we can, we will send out to all the parties what is known as the Rule 8 letter to confirm the examination timetable, the draft of which we've just been through, and any other procedural decisions that may be necessary following this meeting. This letter, the notes of this meeting, and the audio recording will all be published on our website. The issue-specific meeting on the draft development consent order will be held in this room at 1:30 p.m. this afternoon. Seating will be available from 1 p.m. All that remains is for me to then say thank you all for your assistance this morning and to wish all of you who are not joining us this afternoon a safe journey home. This preliminary meeting is now closed.